Hey, welcome back in. It's the Titans Wire podcast. Sorry we missed you last week. Justin and myself, we have some crazy work schedules that didn't allow us to line up and hook up for a podcast. So we apologize for missing last week. Hopefully that won't happen again moving forward. But we're back this week. I'm Kyle Madsen. He's Justin Mello. This is the Titans Wire podcast brought to you by TitansWire.com, where we've got all your latest news, insights, updates from the Tennessee Titans. And Justin, the Titans are coming off a big 33-27 win. They're 2-1, and we talked about the first 4 weeks. Going into the season, we talked about how important these first 4 weeks were. It didn't look good against the Raiders, but they looked great against the Jaguars, looked great against the Seahawks, and now they have a real chance to open up 3-1. But I want to talk about this last week's game. They beat the Seahawks 33-27. It wasn't really that close. And they just took it to a very, very good team.
It was an incredibly impressive performance, especially on the offensive side of the ball. They started slow, but they exploded in the third quarter, which they're making a bit of a habit of, aren't they?
Yeah, they sure are. They've outscored opponents 38-7 over the last two games. And I think it's interesting because it seems to be kind of the recipe now, and it's only 2 weeks. We can't, you know, build this team's identity off 2 weeks, but it does seem to be a little bit of a trend that they start slow. We saw them go into the half 6-3 against the Jags. We saw them go into the half 9-7 here against the Seahawks, and it looks like they're really trying to establish their ground game early and get their offense established before coming out and just kind of wearing a team down to where they can run at will.
Yeah, you almost have to admire their stubbornness, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Especially in the first half of those games, the run game was not working at all. Kind of felt like banging your head into the wall time and time again. But give them credit. Give Mike Mularkey credit. Give Terry Robiskie credit. Give the offensive line credit. They keep at it, and then it just seems by the time the third quarter rolls around, they're able to wear the defense down and start running it at will all of a sudden.
Yeah, and it was so strange because they came out in week one against the Raiders, and they threw 41 times. They only ran it 21 times. It was such a strange performance, and it was almost like they were trying to force the passing offense, trying to exploit maybe some weaknesses in the Raider defense. But I don't think we'll see that again based on what we've seen these last 2 weeks, seeing them just get downhill with their big offensive line and just dominate on the ground.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think the way they've played these last 2 weeks is the way Mike Mularkey wants to play football. And to be fair to him, it's the way the Tennessee Titans are built, and they're at their best when they're running the ball like they did in the third quarter or the whole second half yesterday, and against the Jags as well. So it's the way they want to play. It almost makes us feel a little foolish for thinking that we'd see. Remember when we were talking about maybe seeing a bit of a shift this year on offense with all the new weapons?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't look like it. I think Mularkey and Robiskie want to continue running the ball. And I mean, why shouldn't they, the way it's performing right now?
Yeah, with this offensive line, and especially now that DeMarco Murray is kind of looking back like himself a little bit yesterday, because he hadn't. He only had 69 yards on 21 carries going into the game, and Derrick Henry had to carry the load against the Jags. But yesterday they came out, Murray 14 carries, Henry 13. They combined for 169 yards and a touchdown, and that's got to be the recipe for this team. But what the added offense does, or the added weapons on the perimeter does, is it opens up the passing game when they do decide to throw, and we saw them do that yesterday. They got Jonnu Smith involved. They got that screen out to Rishard Matthews and let him go make a play on those 55-yard catch and run. So I think that's where the benefit of these added receivers are going to come in, is once they wear a team down with that ground game, they can go take over through the air as well.
I agree, and I thought the Jonnu Smith touchdown was especially impressive. It was an excellent play design. They're running the ball at will. They line up Smith in the backfield, actually. You'll notice, I think he was lined up as almost like a fullback.
He was. Yep.
And then Seattle's definitely thinking it's a run, and he releases, and I mean, he was wide open. Hey, like, you can't get any more open than that. And it seems like both of his, he's had touchdowns in back-to-back weeks now. He had a touchdown against the Jags as well. And it seems like that was a similar play where it was definitely designed for him specifically. And again, it was the run set it up. The run sets up the pass.
Yeah, and Marcus Mariota struggled a little bit early in this one, And it seems to be kind of a... He's having some issues with his consistency for me. He hasn't looked bad by any stretch. It's not like, oh my gosh, the Titans need to do something different at quarterback. But I was, I think, expecting maybe a little more from him in the passing game. I mean, Peter King from Monday Morning Quarterback was talking about how Mariota might be set up for an MVP season this year. And I thought we for sure would see a step up from him statistically, but we just haven't seen that. And I don't know if it's because he's still getting used to his new receivers. I don't know if they've tweaked something in the passing game, but he just, to me, looks a little bit off.
Well, I think there's a number of factors that probably go into it. I mean, he struggled with his footwork a little bit in the preseason. He's worked back from the injury. I think for the most part, though, is statistically, I think you kind of hit a cap with this offense, right? This Mike Mularkey run-first power team offense. I don't think he's going to see a big jump statistically running this offense, not as long as they've got that dominant offensive line and they got the two-headed monster at running back. So I think for me that's the biggest factor is it's the same offense as last year. They're going to run the ball down your throat. You could look at perhaps the new weapons. Perhaps they are still getting used to one another. That could play a bit of a role. But again, I think for the most part, it's the offense that he's operating. I thought yesterday, although he struggled in the beginning, I thought he was incredibly efficient in that game against Seattle, playing a really good pass defense. He put up some real good numbers. He didn't turn over the football. I mean, really, especially in the second half, it looked like he had, he was operating an offense that he was born to run.
Yeah, absolutely. Yesterday, he finished with a passer rating of 104.3, and I think what we saw in the latter portion of that game is what we'll kind of see more from him. He completed 62.5% of his passes yesterday, 225 yards, a pair of touchdowns, and a 104.3 rating compared to a 78.7 rating through his first two games. So I think we'll see him grow into that role a little bit, but as long as the Titans have this offensive line they have, I honestly don't think it matters who's back there at quarterback.
No, and you can't say enough good things about the offensive line. I mean, it was unbelievable yesterday, dominant. I mean, you look at the plays, the long touchdown plays, DeMarco Murray 75-yard touchdown run, and Rishard Matthews 55-yard catch and run. It was just unbelievable play by the offensive line. I'm not sure you can draw it up any better, and I'm not sure it could be executed any better. They got out there in front, and they ran downfield with those guys, and they're just a tough group of guys, coached by Russ Grimm, phenomenal offensive line coach, and they're as tough as it comes, boy. I was thinking about it. I mean, they might be one of the toughest teams in the league, if not the toughest team in the league, because of what they have up front there.
Yeah, and this Seattle defensive front does not, they are a good team. This is not some just run-of-the-mill pass rush. This is an elite top one or two pass rush in the entire league. This front seven is fast. They get downhill. They're tough. They blow plays up before they can develop. And the Titans just ate them alive yesterday. John Glennon, who is a writer for the Tennessean, tweeted out these stats. The offensive line for the Titans have allowed 2 sacks, which is tied for first in the league, 5 quarterback hits, which is first in the league, and they're averaging 156.3 rushing yards, which is second best in the league. And yes, that speaks to the talent they have at quarterback with Marcus Mariota's ability to get out of the pocket and extend plays, and it speaks to the talent they have at running back with DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry. But the offensive line, it starts up there, and they have dominated the last two games in a way that I wasn't sure they had it in them after they struggled a little bit in the preseason. We thought we might even see a shakeup along the interior line, but they've just up and down the line, across the line, have been tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about a potential shakeup, but I mean, can you imagine any of those starters losing their job right now? Absolutely not. I mean, and yeah, of course, they've invested a lot into it. Luan's a first-round pick. Conklin's a first-round pick. Jones was a prized free agent signing. But let's talk a little about Josh Klein and Quentin Spain, guys that they got. Spain, they signed as an undrafted free agent. Josh Klein was claimed off waivers after the Patriots waived him. And both of them have been fantastic. I thought Klein was an absolute animal yesterday. He was a beast.
Yeah, he was the one that I was most concerned about in the preseason. Just every game, it seemed like there were multiple plays where he was getting blown up, and it was like, man, is this guy going to be a viable option for them if they're going to run behind this offensive line and run this exotic smash-mouth offense? But he's been their most consistent, best offensive lineman, Pro Football Focus puts out their top five players after each game, and he's been in the Titans' top five every week.
Yeah, I mean, you'll recall I interviewed him for the Titans Wire a couple months ago. I had the opportunity to spend about 30 minutes with him. And I'll tell you, the guy's as tough as they come, man. In my time spent with him, I don't know how many times he repeated that to make it in this league, you just got to be tough. And I felt it oozing out of him. He's just a tough, tough player. I mean, he learned in New England under a phenomenal offensive line coach, Dante Scarnecchia, that's down there. He's just as tough as it comes. The whole offensive line is.
Yeah, and that's something that this team is built around. And it's very clear that no matter what weapons they get on the outside, no matter how good of a quarterback Marcus Mariota develops into, it's going to start with their ground game and grinding it out in the trenches. And if you're putting this offensive line up against any defensive line in the league and you're going to make them go win it for you, I like the Titans' chances in a lot of games.
I mean, you got to feel pretty good about it right now. They're not going to see many defensive fronts better than the one they saw yesterday. And the offensive line, as you mentioned, was able to bully them, really. So you got to like your chances in almost all the games if they can play like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I live out here on the West Coast. I've seen a lot of Seahawks football, man. Bobby Wagner, K.J. Wright, Michael Bennett, Sheldon Richardson, who they just got from the Jets. I mean, these are all outstanding, perennial, Pro Bowl, all-pro level players. And the Titans just pushed them around yesterday. I've never seen anything like it. I've seen the Seahawks defense get beat. We've all seen it before. But I've never seen them get so physically dominated through the final 30 minutes of that game. I mean, really the whole game, but it became apparent how much better the Titans were offensively throughout that second half when the Seahawks defense just looked gassed and the Titans just kept coming at them. I've never seen anything like that. And perhaps it speaks to some decline from the Seahawks defense, but I think really what we're seeing more is the establishment of the Titans offensive line as the league's very best.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it before we started recording here. As the game wasn't even as close as the score would suggest.
No.
At one point, it was 30-14, and you felt like the Titans kind of went into a prevent mode a little bit there. But, yeah, I mean, they bullied them up and down the field in that second half.
Yeah, and you mentioned that prevent. I wanted to talk about that a little bit because Russell Wilson had a career day. He set a career high with 49 pass attempts. He completed 29 of them for 373 yards and 4 touchdowns, a 110.3 rating. But I didn't think the secondary was as bad as those numbers would indicate. I thought...
Absolutely not.
No, I thought the first touchdown pass, Adoree Jackson, had great coverage on Doug Baldwin. Russell Wilson just made a tremendous throw to set up that touchdown. Jayon Brown got beat pretty badly by C.J. Procise. And that's obviously not on the secondary, but like you said, they kind of dropped into a prevent after they went up 30-14. And I think I would have liked to see them continue to apply pressure a little bit on that offensive line. The Seahawks O-line is not good, and the Titans were getting home when they were bringing extra rushers. And I really think that that's what they needed to do in that game.
I agree, and I'd like to see it more as well, but it seems to be the way of the league when teams build a lead that large. The Titans had 30-14, you tend to go into that prevent mode, but I agree with you. I wish they didn't do that, but you're right. I don't think the secondary was as bad as the numbers appear. I thought Adoree Jackson played a really good game. As you mentioned, he had excellent coverage on that Baldwin touchdown. There really wasn't anything else he could have done. It was just a better – sometimes someone makes a better play, and Baldwin made a better play on that ball. But also LaShawn Sims, I thought, played a pretty good, consistent game. I thought Logan Ryan was pretty good for the most part as well. I've got a lot more faith in this Titan secondary than I did a year ago.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you about that. How much of a change do you see? I mean, for me – when I'm watching a game the first time, when I'm just, you know, because I'm taking notes, I'm trying to keep track of a million things. If I don't notice a defensive back, it probably is a good thing. And I feel like last year you noticed guys like Parrish Cox a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like we see that really outside of Adoree Jackson on the first drive of the year against the Raiders where he gave up 2 completions in the touchdown. I haven't really noticed any cornerback outside of, you know, when they make a nice play.
Yeah, no, I think they're much improved than they were a year ago. I've got no concerns or qualms with Adoree Jackson or Logan Ryan or LaShawn Sims for that matter. And let's throw Kevin Byard into the mix too. I thought he was phenomenal
yesterday.
he was excellent yesterday, so he belongs to be mentioned among the secondary. Yeah, no, you're not really concerned about any them going up against many passing offenses right now. I think all three of those guys that they're starting are good corners, and they can compete with just about anyone. I would be concerned if one of those three were to get injured.
Sure.
To be honest with you.
Yeah.
Sims, Jackson, or Logan Ryan. If any of them were to be injured, then I'd be concerned.
Yeah, not a deep group.
No, it's not. But if they're rolling the three of them out there each week, I think they got a pretty good chance to be in the football game till the very end.
Hey, man, based on what I've seen in weeks two and three, I'd be really excited about a Titans-Raiders rematch in the postseason.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think the Titans gave the Raiders their best punch in week one, so to speak. I think there's a number of factors that went into that, and I'm sure the Titans feel the same way. I'm sure they'd love to get another shot at the Raiders sometime in the playoffs. The Raiders, who really, really struggled last night against the Redskins, it was kind of strange
to
see their offense on the offensive line, right? It was really strange to see that. But anyway, I do think the Titans would love to get another chance, and I think they would do a lot better in a rematch than they did in week one.
Yeah, well, hey, to get to the playoffs, they're going to have to win some regular season games here. They're off to a good start, 2-1. They've won back-to-back games. And now they head to Houston. And I said going into this year, I wrote a piece about it on TitansWire.com, that these first four games would really set the tone for the rest of their season. Home against Oakland, on the road to Jacksonville. They hadn't won a divisional road game since 2013. Home against Seattle, then at Houston. They go into Houston 2-1. We're not really sure how good Houston is, but they have a real chance to come out of their first 4 weeks, first quarter of the season, 3-1, 2-0 in their division, at least with a share of first place in the division. Then they go to Miami, they're home for Indianapolis, and at Cleveland going into the bye. I don't want to get ahead of it here, but they have a real chance to go into their bye week 6-1.
I mean, that would be incredible. I think they would probably settle for 5-2. I think that would be a pretty good record to end to the bye. But this Houston game coming up, it's a very big game for a number of reasons, very similar to the discussion we had prior to the Jacksonville game. You know, 2-4 in the division a year ago. They know they got to be better this year. They're off to an excellent start with a road win at Jacksonville. Now you get another chance here. And keep in mind, this is another road game. If they're able to pull this one out, you're 2-0 in the division, both of them being on the road against the two best, you know, the two teams besides yourself who might be able to compete with you for the division. We know the Colts aren't going to compete with the Titans, not without Andrew Luck. So if they can start in this division 2-0, both on the road, beat Houston next week, who won the division a year ago. They've won the division, what, at least 2 years in a row now. It would be a massive statement for this team.
Yeah, the Texans won the division 2 years in a row. They finished second in 2014. But like you said, this is going to be their, I think, toughest opponent in the division. I'm not sure how good Jacksonville is, but if Deshaun Watson's going to continue to play like he did yesterday in New England, the Texans are going to be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, Watson looked really good yesterday in New England. They were 30 seconds away from pulling off a crazy upset. I mean, if it wasn't for what looked like to be a breakdown in coverage, I'm not sure how Cooks got that open in the end zone, then the Texans would be 2-1 heading into today. And I would like to see a game plan next weekend, to be honest with you, very similar to the one that was executed in Seattle. I think you're facing a similar challenge. You're facing a really tough, good defensive front seven that Houston has, obviously guys like J.J. Watt, Clowney, Whitney Mercilus as well. So you're facing a big challenge there in Houston. So if the Titans can go out there and have the offensive line dominate the Houston front seven the way they did Seattle and end that game, leave Houston 3-1, then the sky's the limit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like their chances against the Texans because it doesn't look like New England's defense is very good. Even in New England, they gave up 417 yards to Deshaun Watson and the Texans, 292 through the air, 125 on the ground. But you got to remember, going into that game, the Texans had as a team 208 passing yards through the first 2 weeks. They had 98 passing yards in their win at Cincinnati on Thursday night. There's a chance this team might not be very good. And I think if the Titans come out and they take care of business against the Texans like they did against Jacksonville, I could really see them running away with this division.
I agree with you. As much as we've praised the secondary today, I think we can both agree that the Titans' run defense is still better than the
Absolutely.
Pass defense. So you're facing a Houston team who's going to enter this game 31st in the league in pass yards per game. They're averaging 166.7 through the air. That is pretty bad. If they cannot pass the ball against this Titans secondary, then they're going to really struggle. And I think on paper, we can assume that they'll probably struggle to pass the ball next weekend.
Yeah, I think so. And this is just such a... It's tough because it's only week four, and I know we've been saying that since week one. It's only week one, it's only week two, but I mean, it is only week four. In the event that the Titans do lose this game, it's far from catastrophic. This isn't a must-win game by any means. However, should they win it, you have to like how they're set up for the rest of the year, and I think that like you said, on paper, the Titans are already the best team in the division, and I think they can really make a statement this week if they can go out and dominate yet another game. And I think if they do that against the Texans, we're going to be looking at week one and going, okay, we can kind of toss that off the table because that was very clearly an anomaly from this Titans team.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, not only have they been the best team on paper, but they're the best team on the field as well through the first 3 weeks by a long shot. When you're looking at Houston, another thing I'd like to mention is for as much as the passing game has struggled, they are seventh in the league in rushing right now. They're averaging 128.7 yards on the ground. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that actually starts with Deshaun Watson. I think he's actually been their best runner, to be honest with you. Lamar Miller has struggled mightily so far. The backup running back rookie Foreman has had some flashes, but it seems like Watson has been their biggest weapon on the ground. So Titans got to watch out for that, and hopefully they got some good practice against Russell Wilson for that.
Yeah, and one of the keys against Russell Wilson, and one of the things I wrote about in facing him, is you got to keep him in the pocket. He's so good at improvising, getting out of the pocket and making a play down the field, whether it's with his legs or with his arm. They're going to have to do the same thing with Watson, because Watson can throw. I think Watson's going to be a fine quarterback, but I don't think he's a polished passer yet. And I think if you can keep him inside the pocket, force him to beat you with his arm, he's thrown three interceptions this year, he's thrown three touchdowns, I think he'll make mistakes. And if you can force him into a couple mistakes, it might be a wrap.
And, you know, Dick LeBeau might be, you know, I agree with you. I think Watson's going to be a fine quarterback. I don't think he's there yet. I don't think anyone expected him to be there yet. You have to think Dick LeBeau's kind of licking his chops. He's got a thing with rookie quarterbacks. He really enjoys scheming against them. I think he's going to try to confuse Watson a lot, throw a lot of things at him that he probably hasn't seen yet, throw some things at him that they don't expect him to be prepared for. I think you'll see a lot of things by Dick LeBeau to try to confuse Watson on Sunday.
Yeah, I expect them to blitz him quite a bit. I like what they did with Wesley Woodyard on the third down play late in the fourth quarter, about halfway through the fourth quarter, that set up the 4th and 22 that forced the intentional grounding by Russell Wilson.
Yes, I recall a play you're talking about. Absolutely. I mean, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because to be honest with you, I needed to find a way to throw it in here somewhere. We've praised the offensive line. We've praised the secondary. Wesley Woodyard played out of his mind yesterday.
He was incredible.
He was incredible, and he has been in every game so far. It's only been 3 weeks, but he's been incredible in every game. He's playing... I've watched every snap Woodyard has taken in a Titans uniform, and I think he's playing... You know, or by far, he's playing the best he's ever played as a Tennessee Titan.
Yeah, he just did such a nice job yesterday. He was getting down. He was getting downhill, blowing plays up in the backfield. He was getting after Russell Wilson, and that's so important against that Seahawks team, because, like I said, they do so much improvisational stuff on offense, and Woodyard kept a lot of that from happening. I was talking about before the game how that'd be up to Williamson, Avery Williamson, and Jayon Brown. The two more kind of athletic guys to kind of keep everything reined in. But it was Woodyard yesterday. He was sensational. Like I said, getting downhill, but then also he was making tackles on plays that were 15 yards up the field. He was everywhere.
I want to say Malarkey even went out of his way today to single him out during his press conference. Talked about it. I think he actually said exactly that Woodyard is playing out of his mind for us. And he absolutely is, and I expect him to get pretty creative on Sunday facing a rookie quarterback. I think LeBeau will drop him into coverage at times when it appears he's blitzing, and at times he'll blitz. And, you know, they run that crossover as well They've ran that a couple times this year with him coming, scraping over the top. So I expect to see some pretty creative things out of LeBeau on Sunday.
Yeah, and it's worth noting here that the Texans' offensive line has allowed 15 sacks through three games. And I understand that 10 of those came in week one. But this offensive line can be beat. And if the Texans continue to apply pressure like they did against the Seahawks, at least early, their pass rush was dominant all afternoon against Seattle. If they can continue that kind of pressure against the Texans, I really don't see a way that they go into Houston and lose.
You know, it's actually interesting. The more we talk about it, don't you feel like this is an incredibly similar chance to Seattle? I mean, you got a mobile quarterback in Deshaun Watson, like they just faced in Russell Wilson. You got a struggling offensive line in Houston, just like they faced against Seattle. The running backs aren't doing much for Houston, just like they aren't for Seattle. I mean, the one difference, obviously, is I think Houston's passing offense has probably struggled a little bit more than Seattle's passing offense has, but it's starting to feel like it's an incredibly similar challenge, and you have to feel like that bodes well for the Titans.
Yeah, and something that came up in the news today, Will Fuller, the very talented receiver out of Notre Dame, a second-year player, he's missed the first three games with a broken collarbone, but Pro Football Talk reported today that he could return, or excuse me, the Houston Chronicle reported today that he could return Sunday and may practice this week and be back against the Titans. So between DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller, Bruce Ellington had a nice game against the Patriots. They're getting their offensive weapons back on the outside, and this could wind up being a little bit of a challenge for the Titans secondary that maybe they weren't expecting coming out of that game against Seattle. But like we said, it's all going to come down to the trenches. The Titans have dominated those in their two wins, and I think they have a good chance to do it again on Sunday. And I like them to come out with a victory.
Will Fuller, turning back the clock a little bit, single-handedly beat the Titans last year in their first meeting in Houston. He had a punt return late for a touchdown. That was the game-winning score. And I believe he also scored a long touchdown earlier in the game through the air. I think the Titans are, you know, better versed to face him this year. Won't you love to see a Dory Jackson going up against Will Fuller on Sunday? Those are two speed demons going up the field against each other.
Well, and Will Fuller is one of the guys that they brought in, a Dory Jackson, to kind of help cover. You have your guys like T.Y. Hilton and not a Dory Jackson, but Will Fuller. Those are two guys that you just need a pure athlete to be able to cover, and that's probably going to come down to Jackson. And you mentioned, I meant to bring this up earlier, but since we're on the topic of punt returns and Adoree Jackson, that was a real bummer. His return for a touchdown got called back because of a pretty fluky block in the back call.
Very fluky block in the back call. On second look, it was the right call. The referee messed up the jersey number in the call, which is why I think everyone was kind of up in arms in the beginning. But no, it was actually David Flewellen who was called for the block in the back, and it was a block in the back. Sorry, a block in the back. It was a very silly block in the back, to be honest with you. It didn't look like it affected the play at all. The guy he blocked wasn't going to make a play on Adoree. But yeah, it was pretty damn frustrating because you feel like Adoree's, he's due for one of those, isn't he? They keep getting called back on him. He keeps making these phenomenal plays, but you know it's coming. And it was an exceptional return. I mean, once he bursted into the open field there, he was gone.
Well, that's what's, and we knew, I mean, anybody who watched 10 seconds of USC football last year knew how explosive of an athlete Adoree Jackson is. But watching him make the first couple guys miss and then get to top speed in three steps and run by everybody, it's amazing. I mean, you watch that return yesterday, it's like everybody starts going in slow motion as he goes blowing through the defense or the coverage unit.
I realize it's early, but you have to feel he's well on his way to becoming the best return man in the game, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I think we're going to start seeing teams kick away from him pretty soon because, trust me, he may not have a touchdown on the board, but he had one in the preseason that got called back. He had the long return against Jacksonville that kind of sparked the Titans offense. He had a touchdown against the Seahawks that got called back. He had the play in week one where he jumped over Giorgio Tavecchio, the Raiders kicker, on a kick return. I mean, he has had a highlight play in just about every game, and that's not something that goes unnoticed around the league. And like I said, I would not be surprised if we saw teams start actively kicking away from him, especially in close games where he has a chance to turn the tides.
Well, I'd really like to see this team correct those issues on special teams. We all know they invested a lot into special teams during the offseason, you know, signing Trawick and Darren Bates. I'd like to see them correct that. And Mike Mularkey must be pretty frustrated with it, to be honest with you. I feel like he's frustrated. Don't forget, he fired his special teams coach, Bobby April, very early on last year during the season. He fired Bobby April after just a couple weeks and replaced him with Steve Hoffman, who's still in the job now. But you have to feel like Mularkey's getting pretty frustrated with all the penalties on special teams.
Yeah, and especially since they went out of their way to improve that unit this offseason. They brought in Brendan Trawick, they brought in Darren Bates, who had a pretty nice game on Sunday. But if you're going to go out of your way to improve your special teams unit and say we're going to win on special teams, you got to cut down the penalties. Because that's what separates good special teams units from great ones, is the ability to make plays without committing holds and blocks in the back, and they haven't been able to do that yet.
Absolutely. I mean, you'd have to think if you're Mularkey or if you're Coach Hoffman, I mean, I'm no coach, but you have to feel like they're probably preaching to their unit right now. Just give Adoree a chance. You know, clean up that stupid stuff. It's not necessary. Let's just give Adoree a chance. Let's see what he can do without us doing anything like that.
Yeah, just do, I don't want to say minimal effort, but if you feel like you need to hold a guy, don't. If he makes the tackle, fine, but you got to give your superior athlete a chance to make a play, and they haven't been able to do that yet. But
yeah,
you got to be encouraged by what you see, and I want to get wrapping up here. We're just over the half hour mark, but you got to be encouraged by what you see, because every analysis I read of the Titans draft was they reached on a bunch of guys. They reached for Adoree Jackson at 18. They reached for Jonnu Smith at 100. It seemed like every analysis I read said they reached for these guys, But Jackson, while he hasn't been great in coverage, he's been serviceable for sure. And you got to like the way he's trending early on. They knew he'd be a project there, but I think he's more than made up for it with his contributions on special teams. And I don't think that's anything that's going away anytime soon. And now you see why they brought in Jonnu Smith, because he really is a clone of Delanie Walker, and they're using him in very similar ways. They're running screens for him. They're lining him up all over the field, like you mentioned earlier. He lined up as a fullback on his touchdown reception yesterday. And so this just goes back to John Robinson and how well he's done in the draft. But I think we might look back on this draft, you know, in 5-10 years, if the Titans are still in the hunt for the division and a perennial playoff contender, this might be the draft that kind of helped turn everything and really establish their secondary and that pass catching, blocking, do everything tight end in Jonnu Smith that's so important for this offense. I think this might be the draft that really kind of set their future in motion.
Well, obviously it's early, and you know, I don't like to take a look at a draft class until about 2-3 years worth of play, but
right.
It does, absolutely. It has a chance to be really special. I mean, Adoree, I think he's been above average in coverage, to be honest with you. I mean, again, when you drafted him, people thought it was a reach. We knew, you know, we all felt we were getting a raw player. You're getting a player who's raw playing the corner position. I think he's performed tremendously for what the expectations were. And you have to kind of think, what's he going to look like in coverage 2-3 years from now? He's got a chance to be exceptional. And then you look at Jonnu Smith, who's looking like a steal right now, touchdowns in back-to-back games. Looks like a Delanie Walker clone, as you mentioned. Let's throw Jayon Brown into the mix, who's been
absolutely
very instrumental into the success they've had in coverage this year. He's taken away running backs and tight ends in the passing game. And let's not forget Taiwan Taylor, who seems to make a big play every single game. He was a bit quiet yesterday, but he's made some big plays already, and you see that potential in every single game. You feel like you can send him deeper, you know, try to trick the defense with a reverse, and he's going to come up with a big gainer. And this is all being done without the first guy, Corey Davis, number 5, who, you know, the hamstring injuries unfortunately been hampering him. It's one of those reoccurring annoying injuries, but he looked very good against Oakland. He looked very good in all of training camp and preseason. He's really the prized possession of this class, obviously. They took him number 5. So, I mean, we just mentioned 5 guys there who all have a chance to start for this team for the next 10 seasons.
Yeah, this is encouraging for Titans fans for sure. Not only for this year, because you're getting contributions from rookies, like you said, without arguably your best rookie. And it also speaks to the depth that they've built on this roster, that you can be without the number 5 overall pick at receiver and you're still thriving on offense. They've scored 70 points in the two games where Corey Davis has either been hurt or not playing, because he went out pretty early in that Jaguars game with that hamstring injury, and then he didn't play against Seattle. So you gotta imagine when he comes back, this offense is going to get to, I don't want to say another level, because it's not like they're going to throw at him 10 times, but it's just another weapon for them to kind of play around with when they do open things up and start throwing the ball around.
It certainly feels like they can average close to 30 points a game, doesn't it?
Yeah, I especially if they're going to come out and be able to rip off 75-yard touchdown runs and 55-yard screens, which isn't out of the realm of possibilities with the explosiveness of the playmakers they have and their offensive line's ability to get outside and form a convoy and get out front and block people. I mean, this could become a staple of this offense, those short, quick hitters that turn into these long gains. And like you said, that's something that you get out there, you score a long touchdown, your defense gets a 3-and-out, now your offense is right back on the field and getting back up into the end zone again. That's what we saw in the third quarter yesterday against Seattle. They scored 21 points against a defense that for years wasn't giving up 21 points in a game, and they did it in 15 minutes. And I don't think that's going to be exactly an anomaly for this offense going forward.
And it's the same thing you saw against Jacksonville.
Yeah.
To summarize everything we've talked about tonight, it's a pretty good time to be a Tennessee Titans fan, isn't it?
Yeah, you got to like the direction they're going, not only this year, like I said, a chance to go into Houston and come out 3-1 with two wins on the road in the division, but even looking past this year, which you can never do, but we're going to do it anyways. Even looking past this year for the next 5 to 10 years, you got to like how this team's set up, and this is just this has been an incredible turnaround for them, considering in 2015 they were winning 3 games.
One thing we haven't mentioned that I'd like to quickly touch on, is although we mentioned this game by no means is a do-or-die game, I can promise you it means a lot to Titans ownership. As we all know, Titans ownership roots originate in Houston. Obviously, the Houston Oilers come from there, you know, relocate to the Tennessee Titans. Amy Adams Strunk still lives in Houston. Ownership really, they put a large emphasis on this game in Houston. Don't forget, it was 2 years ago, Ken Whisenhunt was fired after an embarrassing loss in Houston. So you've always kind of felt like ownership, they put a lot into this game in Houston specifically. They'll be out there and they'll care a lot about it.
Yeah, and you mentioned they lost there last year on a punt return touchdown in the third quarter. They went down 27-20 and then couldn't put up another touchdown in the fourth. And, I mean, that's got to be frustrating, especially for a team that struggles not only within their division but specifically on the road in their division.
Yeah, this will be to Amy Adams Strunk, to John Robinson, to Mike Mularkey, to staff, the players who have been there for a couple of years. I feel like they'll want this one pretty bad.
Yeah, and it could definitely set a tone for sure. Because this is, last year they kind of took everybody by surprise. They went 9-7, tied for first in the division, but didn't make the playoffs. But this year was the year they really needed to turn a corner and start changing some of the trends we've seen in the past. They already won in Jacksonville, and now this is an opportunity to really say, look, we're here, we're the class of this division, and we're going to be the team to beat for the next 5 years.
Absolutely. As you said, it's off to a good start. The win in Jacksonville, I thought, was really, really important, really big for them for a number of reasons. And this, you got the same narrative heading into this one. I think it's an important game for them, even mentally, right, to just kind of get over that hump. It doesn't seem like they've beat Houston in any important games as of late. I know they beat them last year in Week 17, but Houston already had the division clinched at that point. So it feels like they haven't been able to beat Houston when it counts. So this will be a big one to get over that hump.
Hey, do you know when the last time the Titans beat the Texans in Houston was?
I don't.
2012, final week of the season.
Wow, that one probably didn't matter either.
No, Houston finished the season 10-6, the Titans finished 9-7. I haven't exactly looked up all the stats and the ramifications of that game, but it's been a half decade since the Titans have gone into Houston and won a game at Reliance Stadium, so... this is, like I said, a chance to really say, look, this team is different. And I really like their chances to go into Houston and get out with a win.
I could be wrong, but I feel like the last win in Houston that actually felt like it meant something was in Vince Young's rookie season. You know, he was from Texas. Titans, you know, Houston passed on him, as you'll recall. Titans drafted him. He went into Houston and won a game in overtime where he actually won that game by running for like a 50-yard touchdown. And the crowd actually cheered him on. It was a pretty big deal at the time because him being a local there, they were really pissed off they passed on him for Mario Williams. Obviously ended up being the right decision, but that's honestly the last time, and that would have been, I think, 2006. That might have been the last time the Titans won a game in Houston where it felt like it actually meant something.
Yeah, Justin, pretty embarrassing knowledge by you there. It was actually a 39-yard touchdown run, not 50.
Oh,
so.
Oops. My...
But other than that, you nailed it. Yeah, that was Titans-Texans, December 10th, 2006, Vince Young for the win in overtime. But, yeah, so haven't won there since 2012. This is a real chance to go establish kind of a new culture and a new hierarchy in the AFC South.
Absolutely. It would show that they've arrived, as you said, and they're to be taken seriously. I remember a couple games last year, even though they had a good record, 9-7, when they would lose, you know, they lost that Week 16 game in Jacksonville, eliminated them from the playoffs. The morale among the fan base, at least from what I could gauge, was same old Titans. So
right.
I think and I don't think anyone will react like that if they lose this game, but it's really important to show that the Titans of the past are gone.
Absolutely. I think that's going to do it for us. Justin, you can find him, our senior contributor. He is at JustinM_NFL on Twitter. You can find me at Kyle A. Madsen. And of course, make sure to follow the Titans Wire on all the social media, Facebook at Titans Wire, and then of course on Twitter at the Titans Wire. I've taken to live tweeting games from the Titans Wire account. I post highlights there. I post my thoughts on the game. I try not to live tweet too much because it's like people are watching the game, right? I mean, post some reactions. Don't be like, hey, 10-yard run. yeah, no, we all saw.
Yeah, I'm not big into that either.
I used to be. Did you? It used to be so bad on my timeline during games. I would post 150 times, and it would just be play-by-play. It was really, really bad, man. But I promise neither of us do that during game day, so go ahead and give us a follow on Twitter. Like I said, he's at JustinM_NFL. That's M as in Michael. And I am Kyle A. Madsen on Twitter as well. And make sure to follow the Titans Wire at the Titans Wire. Thanks, everybody, for listening. For Justin Mello, I'm Kyle Madsen. This has been the Titans Wire podcast, and we will see you next week.